When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. Down here in the rugby dungeon, I am with Phil. Hello, Phil.
Hello, JB.
And of course, down the line, there is Tim. Hello, Tim.
Hello, JB. Hello, Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Now, second time of asking. Tim, why don't you tell everyone the name of this podcast?
Yeah, hold on. You're making it sound like I'm the one that balls that first time. Fine, but I will anyway. I'll just get on with it. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Here with you 52 weeks of the year, making sure that every single Monday you have your rugby fix, especially important after a weekend like the one we just had.
Isn't it just? Isn't it just? And why are you in London? What's going on?
I've been working at TalkSport today on Wales versus Fiji. And can I just say what an absolute gent and consummate pro and lovely man and general voice of rugby Miles Harrison is.
He's cool,
isn't he? I've worked with him the last couple of weeks, and he's I've just got a lot of time for the guy.
Yeah. Well, you said TalkSport coverage. You meant the excellent coverage from TalkSport.
Of course, yeah. So, yeah, get all the Autumn Nations Cup rugby, just as it was all the British and Irish Lions exclusive radio commentary in the UK as well. So, yeah, get your TalkSport app downloaded, and if you're stuck. Like, I've got messages from a lot of people who listened last weekend to Wales, South Africa, when they were in the car park getting out of Twickenham, and they got it on. And come join us.
I did as well this weekend. I listened to the first half of Scotland, South Africa, in the car, travelling up to Preston, and then the second half of England, Australia, in the car, travelling back from Preston, and then immediately watched it again. So I knew what had happened, but I wanted to see it for my own eyes. And what, I have to say, TalkSport was very good.
What, you went to watch? You went to watch Hoppers play?
I missed Hoppers, unfortunately.
What a rare treat. How did they go?
Don't know. Missed Hoppers, unfortunately.
Oh, right, okay. Well, I can tell you they actually won.
Did they?
Yeah, so it looks like them and Otley are running away with that league at the moment. I think they have one less game than Otley played, I think. But they're looking good.
We've got a brilliant review here. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut across you there.
No, please, fire away.
Yeah, you go, Tim. You go.
We got a review here on email. We're contacteggchasers@gmail.com. And Peter Shaw, he said, Egg Chasers is literally a Sale Sharks / Didgeridoo H pod, which dabbles in rugby law subtleties, stash reviews, Steve Diamond worship, and the sexual objectification of male rugby players and their best body parts.
I think that's fair.
And it's still the best thing about my commute on a Monday and a Tuesday morning.
Wonderful stuff.
That is definitely accurate.
Hey, I will tell you something else about these lower league tables. I'll get all this out of the way so you can get into things that you want to talk about now. But I want to know what's going on at Blackburn Rugby Club. Because every time... Did you see the video that I don't know if Blackburn put it out, but the one doing the rounds on WhatsApp of that scrimmage against Vale of Loon?
I did. I saw a video of them UFO. Yeah. UFOing the opposition.
I've never seen anything like that. I've never seen anything like it. And they've won again. They've won again this weekend. And they beat Macclesfield, which, in historic terms, Macclesfield have been right up there. I don't think they went quite as high as Championship. Maybe they did.
This is what people are tuning in for, by the way.
Yeah, they've certainly been
Blackburn v Macclesfield. That's what they're here for.
Well, but Mac for years were tier 3, tier 4 years and years and years.
Macclesfield have had Cam Neill play for them, Sam James, Luke James, Tommy Taylor, Tom Cruise.
Yeah,
I mean, this is a very big club. A very big regional club.
Yeah,
and they've been beaten by Blackburn. So I'm going to get to a Blackburn game because I want to see what's going on.
Well,
sorry, Phil. Go on.
I'm just going to mention, won't mention too much about National League Two North, because Stourbridge are now the only unbeaten team in the league.
Well,
tell a lie. Rotherham are still unbeaten, but they have played two fewer games than us. But Sedgley lost 32-31 away at Stourbridge. Stourbridge with a last minute penalty to win the game.
So Stourbridge had to lend Huddersfield a prop a few weeks ago. I understand Huddersfield were in a similar situation this week, which led to someone getting in contact with me over Twitter, which I thought might lead to me being offered a game at Huddersfield in level 4 or level 5.
Level 4.
Yeah, which I would have done. I would have done in a heartbeat if they needed a tighter prop. But then I thought, then luckily, whatever reason, it didn't come to fruition. But they did go to Loughborough Students and lose by only 2 points. So that's pretty good stuff.
So that's final bit of admin.
Yeah.
Go on, Tim.
Go on, Tim. Final bit of admin
before we get into the actual substantive rugby stuff, and not the most incredibly niche beginning to any international weekend rugby podcast.
This is more important. This is so much more and more interesting, quite frankly.
we've been contacted by several people. You know who you are. The people that got in touch with us, contactheadchasers@gmail.com, another one for our literally files. If JB, you could fire the first clip.
What? Is someone going to literally going to jail now? It's a literal jail.
This is someone's literally going to literally jail. This is Mike Tindall.
Six guys streaked naked across the pitch, and Dave Flatman got so angry, he literally killed this one guy.
David
Absolutely,
Flatman.
Absolutely, literally.
Wow.
Does
anyone know about this?
Has he been arrested?
Oh my word! Did you hit?
Yeah, I think I know where you're going with this.
Go on. Where am I going with this?
There was a news story.
Yes, I am going with that.
That I only read this week. It might be older. About the student who, in a game of truth or dare, or either truth or dare, or I've never.
Truth or dare was
admitted to killing his own, burning his grandmother's house down and killing her.
Yeah, have you heard this story, Tim?
What?
And went to prison because of it.
Literally gone to jail.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Anyway, what I thought is, I'm referee, JB, you're my assistant.
Okay,
Phil,
sure.
Phil, you're the TMO. And okay. We need to check back on this a second. So could we just see it from a different angle, JB? Number two, please.
Yeah, certainly.
Dave Flatman got so angry, he literally killed this one guy. Absolutely.
Did he say stop?
Yeah, okay. No, I just need to see it at full speed again. Number three, please.
Yeah, okay.
He literally killed this one guy. Absolutely. Literally.
Wow. Yeah.
Dave Flatman is a murderer.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're going to have to go through this in order, aren't we? So, was there intent? There most certainly was intent. Force? Sounded fairly forceful to me. He's got to go to literary jail. That is one of the worst offenders that I've ever heard.
I would love to, as the TMO, step in and upgrade or downgrade things, but mostly upgrade.
Yeah,
but absolutely. I can't. I completely agree with your decision.
Yeah, that's horrendous. I guess Mall Over will be pleased it's not them this week.
We broke Russ from Mall Over. We just broke him.
Yeah.
He couldn't speak. And there is one more. I'm going to find the email that this came from, but if you can hit the final file.
Of course I can.
Well, it feels right, doesn't it? Goal.
Well, I've seen it all now. I have literally seen everything now.
Wow.
We've got an omnipotent darts commentator. You can see the past, the present, and the future everywhere.
You could have literally seen anything in darts. Pro darts. You could have got away with that. Just a little bit better phrasing. But now he's literally got to go to jail. What a shame.
I will find your name, whoever sent that one. I've just lost it, unfortunately, this particular second in time. But contact eggchasers@gmail.com for all of those. How good was the rugby? Oh, my goodness. I loved it this weekend.
It was all right.
The Ireland-New Zealand game was one of the best games I've seen in years.
I've not seen it yet. I've not rewatched it. I was absolutely steaming drunk yesterday in a Colwyn Bay Rugby Club reunion. So I didn't actually sit. That's the only game I've not really seen anything of.
It was brilliant. It was absolutely sensational. What a performance by Ireland.
So there are some fixtures now. I was talking to someone in rugby circles today. And I was like, do you find international games boring? Or do you find them really, really boring? And the answer just came back, which is, I don't watch international. And so, yeah, okay, I definitely can see that. And I think, except for the Six Nations. And I think the Six Nations is good because every fixture is competitive. And I think the Autumn Nations is like, you've got to sort of contrive these fixtures. And there's so many repeat fixtures because there's not that many competitive teams. But there are some fixtures that just really stand out for you. And Ireland All Blacks is definitely one of them. Definitely one of them.
It's one of those amazing fixtures. And it's become one of those amazing fixtures in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Since Ireland first won in 2016 after 100 years of trying and failing. Then they've played each other 5 times since then. Ireland have won three. New Zealand have won 2. And the games that Ireland have won have just been brilliant games, brilliant performances, where Ireland each time have found a level above anything I think they've done previously. Well, and this was no exception to that.
You know that saying, don't you? Something like, like the Yankees win because the stripes on the uniform, i.e. it's just because they are the Yankees.
Yeah, and everyone buys into the fact that they are the Yankees.
I just don't think Ireland care who the All Blacks are now. They're not bothered.
They don't. The All Blacks were impossible to beat, and it was no game summed it up better than Ireland are. Was it 6 points up? The clock goes into the red. New Zealand are in their own 22. They go 90 something metres to score the try in the corner. Dan Carter. He misses the conversion, but Ireland have charged early. He gets a second shot of, this was about 2014.
Yeah,
he gets the second shot of the conversion and slots it for them to win by 1 point. And you just think, if Ireland can't close that game out with the clock in the red, the New Zealand have to go 90 metres to and score a converted try, then they're never ever going
to
win.
They do to the All Blacks what the All Blacks do to everybody else, which is the All Blacks are able to raise their game 10-15% more than whoever they're playing. And for whatever reason it is, Ireland were able to do that against the All Blacks.
Well, this game, I think they raised it more than that. I think Ireland were absolutely superb right throughout the game. And I was certain at half-time when Ireland, they had a disallowed try for Furlong. They kicked to the corner several times, and particularly with the last play of the first half, they kicked to the corner and get nothing out of multiple attempts. New Zealand get the kind of, not lucky, but soft Taylor try to go in 10-5 up at half-time. And you just think, Ireland have blown it. They've had all this territory, all this possession, and all they can show for it is 5 points. New Zealand will get stronger in the second half, and New Zealand will pull away. I would have bet the farm on, at half-time, New Zealand are going to win this comfortably. And then Ireland just came out, and they were by far the better team for the whole of the second half. They totally blew New Zealand away. They were magnificent.
Literally, how good were they?
They were.
Well, I'll put it this way. I think the stats were something like, again, give or take, numbers might not be quite right. I think it was 67% territory, 60% possession, and they totally dominated New Zealand. And I think it says everything about New Zealand that they were still in the game with not long to go. And they can just bang and score. I think to keep New Zealand to 20 points also is another stat, which is, that's a rarity.
It is.
And the other really noticeable thing about Ireland, which is normally something you associate with New Zealand, is the bench had such a big impact. And the final 20 minutes were awesome. Peter Omani and Tadhg Byrne coming off the bench just... At the point when New Zealand want to speed it up, they completely ravaged their breakdown. And Joey Carberry, who's been a bit iffy and hasn't quite been fulfilling the promise that he showed in years gone by, he came on and just looked cool as a cucumber.
What do we think of the, well, I was going to say the decision not to start Richie Wonga, but then I'm looking at Beauden Barrett, so, you know.
Yeah, New Zealand are.
Either or.
I was thinking about that in the game, that is that one of the few substitutions, with possibly the exception of, I don't know, South African props, where you have starting a top five in the world in their position and replacing them off the bench, you also have a top five in the world in their position.
Yeah, pretty much.
There's not many international sides that can boast that kind of option.
Yeah, it's a good point, that.
But he... I know Beauden Barrett went off early with a head knock, but Richie Wonga was kept quiet the whole game. He was virtually anonymous the whole game. Same with Sever Rees. Will Jordan took his try beautifully. Mm. But that whole back New Zealand back line were just kept so quiet.
Yeah. Well,
I think some of the noticeable names, people talked a lot about James Lowe, and, you know, rightly so, he had a great game. And I think he referenced in his post-match chats how much criticism he's got for his defence. And, yeah, and rightly so at international level, but he definitely answered his critics in that game. And the other person in the back three, Hugo Keenan, it's like...
He was awesome. He
was absolutely awesome. And you have arguably the best ever fullback for Ireland in Rob Kearney retire. And then you've sort of had this period where you weren't quite sure who was going to fill that shirt. There was Stockers, there was Jordan Lama, Hugo Keenan, but it's Hugo Keenan. He is the heir apparent.
No, Hugo Keenan's not a fullback, is he? I got that wrong. I thought he's a winger who then was moved into fullback.
So I think I've only really seen him at fullback.
I've only ever seen him for Ireland.
He's probably played early on, because he's not actually that young. He's 25.
Yeah.
He probably early on played a bit on the wing, but I think of him as a fullback.
So it's just a good example, isn't it, of where England fall down. I'm going to make this a little bit about England, and where so many teams are able to progress. Because Ireland just don't have that many options. So you just go with the guy who is obviously a brilliant player. You don't play for Leinster unless you're a brilliant player to start with. And in the same way, you don't really play in the Premiership unless you're a very good player. And just give him time and let him settle in. Whereas England would be liable to change him, find someone else, go back to the old guy, because they've got so many options. It actually works against them. That's why Wales can build such stability. And, well, Ireland have done this with Keenan. Just give him enough time, turn into a bloody good player.
Well, it is a good point. I do want to talk about Ireland a little bit more, but on the England thing, do you know how many England players have got 100 England caps?
Must be a few of them.
What, that are currently playing or ever?
No, ever. How many players have got 100 England caps?
Farrell.
Well, no, Farrell doesn't have 100 England caps yet.
Oh, good point. Just England caps.
Which is why he didn't lead the team out at the weekend, and Maro Itoje did with his 50th cap.
Maro's on 50 caps already.
Yeah, yeah. So 100 caps, you'll have Jason Leonard.
Yep. Rob Shaw, something like that. Haskell.
No.
They must be 70s rather than 100s.
I bet there's another prop. No, because they didn't play that many games back in the day. That's the thing. It has to be a sort of more modern day player.
Yeah, don't know. How many have Ben Youngs?
Ben Youngs has 100 caps.
Owen hasn't quite got 100 caps yet. And then Courtney's got 97, I think, or 92 or something ridiculous.
Courtney has, I think, 89 or 90.
Okay.
Courtney will be close with his Lions caps. He'll have another three, maybe? Five?
Simon Shaw must have... No, that's not a good guess.
The answer is you've got them all.
Oh, really?
There are two players. There are only two players for England who've got over 100 England caps.
Wow. So that does tell you that they do tend to change players quite regularly.
Yeah. It shows the options available to them.
It's crazy that Martin Johnson doesn't have 100 caps.
No, Martin Johnson, because he played pre-professionalism as well. Don't forget. He has 84.
I can't believe he's only got 84. That's mad.
Yeah.
He played pre-lifting in the lineup. Yeah, he played pre-lifting, didn't he? He did where they used to just jump.
Jump.
Farce. What a farce.
That does look tin pot when
does
you look back.
There's flapping really in the air. Does. The line-out kings. Kings of the line-out. Here they go.
Success rate, 51%. yeah, the... What I wanted to mention for Ireland was the point that you made, Tim, actually, about the experience coming off the bench, which was brilliant, but also the two players that you mentioned, Ty Burn and Peter Omani, who forced the last two penalties, and just how good it was for Ireland when New Zealand were tiring, when they were trying to attack and they were forced to attack, to be able to bring two guys like that to slow the breakdown and win penalties. And it actually reminded me of, well, not just the game I'd previously watched, but the way that South Africa have played, bringing the bomb squad off the bench and having guys like Kitsoff and Vincent Cock and Malcolm Marks, who are absolute menaces around the breakdown.
They are.
When the opposition attack and ruck clearers are getting tired towards the end of the game, bringing guys like that off is just a nightmare to play against.
This is why I don't buy the whole Eddie Jones, the ruck, still, ruck speeding up. It's speeding up because people are allowing it to get quick. But if you're relying on ruck speed of 2 seconds or 1.8 seconds, there are all players out there who will just ruin your entire day. Well, easily.
There are the players, and we'll come on to the ruck speed in the England game because it was an absolute joke, to be honest. But it was something that Ireland did brilliantly, particularly early on in, throughout the first half and early on in the second half, was get really, really fast ball for Jameson Gibson-Park.
Yeah.
He got repeated fast ball, and that's where the tries came from, because they were so fast. They were carriers getting over the gain line, then one man blowing past, and then the ball is there ready, and the carriers were working really hard on the floor to present.
Yes,
yeah, so
there's a few thoughts on this now, isn't there? Because unbelievably, they've changed the laws around movement on the floor, which I think is just so stupid. It's such an unnecessary change. So all of your community coaches, all of your pro coaches, in fact, everyone's teaching for the longest time, you hit contact, you roll and present. And the idea behind the roll is you get people's hands off you and then you go long.
Mm-hmm.
So going long would be a thing. But actually, because the powers that be deemed that to be unfair, or for whatever reason it is, they decided this is not a good idea. It's now one dynamic movement. So they've forced players now to get to the ground even quicker, probably not as aggressively. So with the roll, you could have a little bit more leeway, you could put in a leg drive, you could do all sorts of other things. Now, because it's one dynamic movement, they get the ball back even quicker. It's absolute madness.
It led for Ireland to have some very, very good, quick attacking ball that they used excellently.
And that's what was noticeable with Ireland, is that they really had a crack. They backed themselves, sometimes from close to their own line, because they had that speed of the ball and clearly an intent where they're saying, we're going to mix it up a little bit.
Mm.
Yes, they did the territorial kicking game really well and put the pressure on with a kick chase. But they had a go from time to time, and that's what I really liked about this. It's definitely by far the best moment of Andy Farrell's tenure as head coach, and he's had a lot of people questioning how long he'll be there and what his success could be. But I think this pointed the way to a confident Ireland who can have a bit of balance in the way they play, and I really, really like the look of it. That said, three things certain in life: death, taxes, and Ireland peaking between World Cups.
Yeah, that would be a perfect time for them to get really good, wouldn't it?
This is their amazing year. They'll win the Six Nations next year, 2 years out from a World Cup.
Yes!
And then it's all downhill from there.
Perfect. Well done, Ireland.
they were class.
Sorry, I should have said between... Not. I should correct myself. I should have said not between World Cups, between World Cup quarterfinals.
Yeah. Wonder if they'll make it past the quarterfinal stage this next time round. Surely they must. But then again, everyone else is getting better too, so...
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Maybe. New Zealand will time it right for the World Cup. Don't you worry about that.
Exactly. For another semi-final, bless them.
that atmosphere just looked incredible.
Oh, I bet it was. I bet it was awesome.
It was such a good game, this. And so many good performances. Sorry, Tim. So many good performances on the Ireland team as well. It's hard to...
There were some really good performances. Luke Pearce, I thought, did a really good job. Although, again, my memory got hazier and hazier as the day went on. I can remember loads about Scotland, South Africa. I can remember less about Ireland, New Zealand. I can remember not very much about England, Australia. But actually, no, I got my second win for England, Australia. I can't remember whether it was an Ireland try that was given that probably shouldn't have, or a New Zealand try that was chalked off.
So there were two disallowed tries, and I think Luke Pearce got both of them right. They were difficult decisions, and the first one, because I was supporting Ireland in this game very much so. The first one, the Ronan Kelleher try, it was the Ty Furlong try, but Ronan Kelleher double movement on the floor. I was cursing him when he gave that as a no try, when he went back to look at it. It was the right call. it was definitely the right call. But I was at the time, I was saying, let the boys play.
Of course.
The Akira Iwani try, that was also probably on balance the right call. But I think it's a bit tough because of the... I think it wasn't that clear and obvious. It looked probable, but because the camera was at such an angle, the camera's like on the halfway line looking at a pass basically on the 22. So it was very, very difficult to definitively say. But I think probably justice was done on that one as well.
That was the point. And we kind of mentioned it last week, the clear and obvious. And I think there was a great example in the Wales-Fiji game today where it was Lewis Rees-Sammet's try, which, I mean, I could. It looks like we can get onto that in a bit. It looks like it shouldn't be a try, but the referee said, "Well, I made the call on the field, and if we're debating whether or not it might have been, I've just got to go with my decision on the field because that's what I gave."
He's absolutely right, though.
Which is what Luke Pearce didn't do.
Yes, and I kind of agree with that principle, but in the Lewis Rees-Sammet one, Nick Berry was like 30 yards behind him. There is no way his perception on the field was better than the angle from the camera. So I think that one should have been overturned, the Lewis Rees-Sammet try. But anyway, the weirdest one in the Ireland New Zealand game, and I think Luke Pearce got this wrong on two counts. Now, Tim, I don't know if you will remember this, and JB, you certainly won't. But there was a about midfield. New Zealand start breaking down the right-hand side halfway through the second half, and New Zealand need to score a try. I think they're 10 points down at this time. The ball is passed to Will Jordan, just attacking in open play. He drops it. The ball goes backwards. The touch judge, I think it was Christoph Ridley, signals the ball goes backwards, and Luke Pearce signals the ball goes backwards. Will Jordan totally stops to the point where, I think it was Andrew Porter, just takes the ball off him. And Luke Pearce blows up.
Ugh.
Even though there hasn't been any offence. So that is that Luke Pearce makes a mistake there. He then compounds the mistake by giving New Zealand the scrum. Even though Will Jordan has just basically handed the ball to, I think it was Porter, but whoever he handed it to. So he compounds his mistake by trying to correct Will Jordan's mistake. It should have been play on, and actually Porter passes it to Jameson Gibson-Park, who's about to run in from 50 yards because he's rapid.
Yeah,
it should have been a try Ireland, but it ended up being a scrum New Zealand.
Ridiculous!
All because it would have taught Will Jordan a very, very valuable schoolboy lesson.
Play to the whistle.
I couldn't believe what I was watching. It's crazy.
For all the talk about these decisions from Luke Pearce, I guess the overall point, which I would make, is he really let the boys play generally. And
he was very good.
He made for a fantastic game of rugby. So I don't want to take anything away from that. And when we saw, and when we move on to England-Australia, I'm sure we'll mention what a slightly more picky referee can do to the flow of a game.
Yes.
Hey, there is one other thing which I think we need to... take note of from the international results. And I hate to take you down a little rabbit hole. Do you see what the Japan score was?
They beat Portugal, didn't they, by about 15 points.
Yeah, 25-38. That's bloody respectable. Mm. That's really good.
For Portugal. Portugal are having a bit of a mini renaissance at the moment, aren't they?
They are.
Did you see the images from the match? I saw some of the pictures from the game and just the beautiful... orangey red sky as the sun's going down in that lovely stadium. It looks like a
where do
potential
they play?
Tier 2 tour.
That's exactly nice. Right, Tim. That's exactly right.
They play some games in Lisbon, don't they?
I'd hope so. I'd really hope so.
Where was this game?
Isn't that all Portugal is, though? Golf resorts in Lisbon.
The Algarve in Lisbon.
That's what I understand it to be, at least. Maybe it's
a bit of that sweet wine they make.
So they're in the fourth largest city. I'm going to pronounce this wrong, but it's spelled Coimbra.
Coimbra?
Coimbra.
Never heard
of it. Fourth largest city.
It sounds like something near Newcastle.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Coimbra Miners.
Just my northern accent.
A pit town just outside the concert.
Exactly.
Very good.
But yeah, well, it also could point to, yes, you're right, and Portugal are clearly coming up. There are some teams we've been talking about in recent weeks, like Canada, the demise, but Portugal are clearly on the way up. Well, equally, it maybe does just highlight that Japan aren't what they were, which is a real shame.
Like, do you know, all these teams with golden generations, and Japan obviously had a very good crop of players when they went to the last World Cup.
And the one before.
Yeah, so we spoke about it last week, didn't we, with Ireland, when all their golden players retired, and they just got better. I imagine it'll be the same thing for Japan. I mean, look at Georgia today. Yeah, they're on the end of a heavy loss. They had for years Gorgodza, who was not replaceable. Turns out he was absolutely replaceable, and they'll just carry on replacing. And now they've got a basis of players, I think they'll be fine. I think they'll carry on improving, actually.
Well, Japan did win their Rugby World Cup pool 2 years ago, and they got absolutely pumped by a team that they beat.
Yeah, their performance against Ireland was the one that worries me most.
Yeah, well, yeah. They need to win the World Cup once. As long as you just beat Ireland in the World
Cup.
Fine.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
And Scotland. Let's not forget beat Scotland.
As we just mentioned a little pit town outside Newcastle where Portugal play their home games, following on from last week's podcast, Josh Turner got in touch to give us let us know the identity of the Newcastle University mascot.
Yeah, it's good on this.
Who smashed the Streakers in the Northumbria Uni versus Newcastle Uni match that we got sent a video of. And it was one of JB's favourites, Tim Swinson.
Swinners. Absolute dominator, levelling people.
In the mascot outfit. And Josh got in touch. He said Tim Swinson was a former Newcastle alumni along with him, and also went to the same school as Josh, Oundle School, which is also the school the Curry twins went to.
Is it really? Mm. Did not know that.
Yeah. No, I didn't.
If we're covering a tiny bit of Tier 2, did either of you see the Spain score?
No, I didn't. What was it?
No, I didn't.
So Spain played Russia at home for Spain in Madrid, the lovely Campus Stadium. And this was not an autumn international because it's actually part of the extended European Rugby Nations Cup, whatever it is. 49-12 to Spain.
Oh, good.
Big. Big win.
Huge win. Ostrakov play?
No, he did not.
Val?
Yes, Morozov did play.
Oh, nice. Massive man. Oh, good. Good,
Russia.
Good.
Yes, exactly.
Our boys did the business. So Spain and Portugal, look it up. Good.
So I guess we should talk about a famous day for sale sharks at Twickenham.
It was, and on this one. Because you referenced that four Sale Sharks players, two on debut, Bevan Rod and Raffy Quirk. I just quickly mention one thing. So Raffy Quirk, Broughton Park mini rugby player, junior, until he got taken by the Sale Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's playing for England. I'm a member at Broughton Park, where I take my son. And because of that, I got sent a little link to a Zoom link where after the game, you were allowed to see, or hear, I should say, the presentation of the first cap for Raffy Quirk.
Amazing.
Awesome. I just thought, such a lovely touch, wasn't it?
Was this all Broughton Park members, was it?
As far as I'm aware, it was basically everyone from the, and I assume Bevan Rod's junior club had the same thing. So yeah, because I was at Broughton Park, I got this Zoom link. And I listened in
Amazing.
To England in the change room after the game and the presentation of the caps. And Kyle Sinclair did a little speech and gave Bevan Rod his first cap. And then Ben Youngs did a speech and gave Raffy Quirk his first cap. But I just thought, what unbelievable access, and what a lovely thing. And it demonstrates both how big of a deal it is to get your first cap generally, but secondly, how important the grassroots game is to the players that emerge at the top, and the connection between the two. I just thought that was such a lovely thing.
Yeah,
and
I love that.
Yeah, it's great. It's really great. I would not be surprised if Bevan Rod does not have a junior club. He's a Sebba lad. A lot of these lads don't tend to have junior clubs.
Well, he was born in Scotland, but spent a lot of his formative years in the Isle of Man, as I understand.
Oh, really?
Before going to Sebba.
Maybe played for Douglas, I don't know.
Might have done.
Vagabonds, who... What was I saying then? Something about... Yeah, so I'm always amazed by the amount of lads that do not have junior clubs. A lot of them,
because they play
do.
Schools.
Yeah, they play schools and they go straight into a club. Mm. So, like, Will... what's the name? Will from Sale. The one
Cliff.
Went to no, the other one. The one went to
Addison. Will Addison.
Will Addison. Thank you.
Okay.
Like he was kind of semi-linked to a club, but never played senior rugby for that club, and had like one Colts game. I just think it's amazing because they miss out on so much of what rugby is if you go from school just to pro.
Mm, definitely.
So you know what was involved in the speech, then, Tim, or some things you're not allowed to say.
No. It was just kind words, and I think it was just spoken very much from the heart from Ben Youngs about his memory of getting his first cap and what a big moment it is, and how precocious a talent Rafi Quirk is, and it's first of many. But it was that kind of a thing. You just heard the big cheers from all and the applause from all the other players and stuff. It's just
I'm trying to think what kind of thing I would say to Rafi if I was Ben Youngs. I'd probably say something along the lines of, I've seen off Robson, seen off Kerr, seen off Wigglesworth.
Willie Hines. Ben Spencer.
Ben Spencer's gone.
I got Owen Farrell to tell Eddie how much he hates Ben Spencer. Yeah.
Look, enjoy this cap, but trust me, it's not going to last long.
I didn't finish the story, actually. So then he said some nice words. Then he put Raffy's cap on the floor, and you just heard the sound of we.
You won't be lasting long around here, pal.
I've just seen the end. Before we get onto the England-Australia game, I've just seen the end of Portugal versus Japan. So... Portugal were 6 points down.
Yeah.
They're attacking and they throw an intercept try after the 80th minute. So Japan end up winning by however many points it was, 13 points,
yeah,
because of a last minute intercept try. That if it goes the other way, Portugal win the game.
Wow.
Oh.
See, there's more to rugby than just the top level internationals.
There is, and we have covered a lot of it up to this point. England-Australia.
Yeah, well, firstly, that was the sort of story in the build-up, wasn't it? Joe Marler missed out, so Bevan Rodd was on the bench, and then Ellis Genge goes out. Bevan Rodd to be starting.
He did all right, didn't he?
So he did. He only joined up with the squad on Thursday. He had one training session.
Do you know what I do like about Eddie Jones? There's lots of things I don't like, but there's one thing I do really like. If you're in a squad, you play. He doesn't go back on his squad. He doesn't say, right, we're down 86 loose head props. If you're in his squad, you're there to play. And Bevan was there. He didn't call up Vunipola. Could have gone numerous ways.
So Vunipola was in France on holiday with his family.
Slash signing contracts.
Or signing contracts. Yeah, for Toulouse or whoever.
And because of that, and I found out about this, because I think Harry Williams and Alec Hepburn are another couple who would have been considered. They were away as well. And the thing is, the reason they couldn't then join the squad, even had Eddie Jones wanted to, is they hadn't been doing the regular testing protocol.
What a waste of time.
So they're outside then?
Outside of their eco bubble or whatever they call it.
Well, one of my big bugbears this week, I don't know if either of you saw the pre-match press conference, not the day of the game, but about 2 days before the game when Eddie named his squad. Or named it his 23. There was 10 minutes of questioning from the press to Eddie Jones, and I think I counted two questions about rugby. It's 9.5 minutes, basically the same question from 10 different
people. It's astonishing, isn't it?
On COVID.
You've got one.
It's so boring.
You've got one of the most interesting rugby coaches in the world in front of you, about to play a game, and you want to ask about COVID. Are you insane? Are you nuts? What question can you ask about COVID, which is going to further on that? Why? I don't even want to talk about COVID. I don't want the COVID news from rugby journalists.
It was the same question as well. Oh, it was so frustrating. And so you had 10 minutes of Eddie Jones. Yeah, one of the great minds who is... He's starting his captain at 12, who's a fly half. He's starting the mercurial Marcus Smith. There was one question about those two.
Yeah, and that, was it? What does it mean for Marcus Smith to be here? Oh, yeah, he hates it.
So, yeah.
And also, were there any Emma Raducanu questions?
There wasn't then. There was obviously the bit of the
Raducanu gate.
The reaction.
She's untouchable, isn't she? You can't say anything about Emma Raducanu. You say anything about Emma Raducanu.
People went for him on that, didn't they? This is one of the things I dislike. This is just like the discourse in the world at the minute.
But do you think he knows about it? Like, do you think he knows that people went for him about it? Because he's not on Twitter.
I don't know. Maybe he doesn't even know. He must have known because it was in all the newspapers.
He says he doesn't read newspapers.
Yeah, he says he doesn't read them. He knew about it enough that he sent her a letter to clarify what he meant.
Okay. Yeah, so that is a good point.
What I was going to say is the people just love to leap to the worst possible interpretation of anything anyone says.
I mean, the fact he was comparing Emma Raducanu to the most precocious rugby player probably in the world right now tells you everything you need to know about what he thinks about Emma Raducanu. He thinks she's one of the most precocious athletes on the planet. She must do, because that's the comparison that he's making. And, like, for all these people to get on their high horses, say, oh, well, how can he possibly say it would affect her? What? Like, can you imagine going to the Met Gala? Can you imagine being 18 and then 2 years later, or however old she is now, being just swamped in this publicity? You'd be mad to think it doesn't affect her.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and her agency that was the same people that signed Maria Sharapova when she first won Wimbledon age 17 or whatever it was. The person who's her agent now said, quote, "Yeah, we're cashing in." And Eddie Jones may have a point in the sense that, which is absolutely right, but the bit I saw that made me go, no, I think this might be what Eddie Jones means. Not that he's saying don't do it, just, you know, you need to be aware of the potential pitfalls. She's advertising Sports Direct.
Really?
I mean, it's not all Armani and Gucci
Sometimes you've got
Swarovski, whatever. Yeah. She's doing Sports Direct as well.
Yeah, and the massive cups.
Sometimes you're drinking Paul Roger at the Met Gala, and sometimes you're drinking white wine out of a pint glass in a pub just outside Newcastle.
Yeah, in a pit town called Coinage.
With Mike Ashley.
Coimbra.
Or sometimes you like a pint and a half of tea.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I found the whole thing absolutely ridiculous. And here's the thing, it's the forced ignorance from some of the writers and journalists and people that cover this thing. Because what they should have done is they should have tried to understand what Eddie Jones was trying to say. Because he's a high-performance individual. He's been around many top athletes, not just rugby. You might have learned something. If you tried to take what he said in good faith and tried to understand what he meant by what he was saying, you'd have come away learning more. But the fact that they just wanted to cause controversy, and of course it is quite funny that Emma Raducanu might snub an invite to Twickenham. Like, who cares?
Well, he forgot her name, and some people somehow made that into a massive snub.
Oh my God, did you hear when he called the young lady, the young girl, a young girl? I couldn't believe it. I could not believe what I was hearing. So, just absolute craziness. So, we know everything we need to know about what he thinks about Emma Raducanu.
Yes.
We know everything we need to know about COVID.
The COVID protocol.
We know very little about covering the game. So why don't we talk about the actual game?
Yes.
Yeah.
Although,
starting with Marcus Smith, and I'm just going to put it out there. Not only could Smith Farrell be like a new Lethal Weapon style buddy cop movie, young, precocious, maverick talent who doesn't do things in a conventional way, and then the old stager who's
goes by the book. I'm too old for this shit.
Yeah.
Like he's only 3 weeks away from pension. I'm not doing this.
Exactly. I'll find one more case. World Cup 2023. So that combination on paper just looks like it has a natural balance that could be a film.
What would it be called? Serious Cop.
But I'm going to put it out there. I think it could work, you know, from what I saw against Australia.
I mean, I don't see how two phenomenally talented players playing together could ever work. But, yeah, I think you're right.
I think it could work. And what was it, 6 minutes into the game when the two of them combine to put Steward through that enormous hole, and he just steps and glides around Kirtley Beale under the sticks.
That, I think, is the biggest... It's not the debut. He's not a debut for him, is it? But that, for me, is the most exciting young player on that field. I think he is. I don't know what his leadership quality is like, but I can see him being there for years. I can see him being a captain. I really can.
I can see him being there for years because he is so good and so composed under the high ball. And he does have that side of things to his game as well.
This is no joke. He's Israel Folau-esque. The way he gets in the air is just phenomenal.
And it helps when you're 6'5".
It does. Well, just like Izzy.
Yeah. And, not the tallest fullback ever, of course.
That is the Canadian fella. Is it Mike Pike?
Mike Pike.
Yes, get in.
6'7".
Yeah, Mike Pike.
Good knowledge.
Somebody made the reference to Chris Larkham back in the day. Chris Latham.
Yeah. Now, so I mentioned that a while ago.
Yeah, maybe it was you, actually.
Yeah.
I like that comparison.
Yeah.
Because he's a powerful runner as well.
Long-range runner. He's a big boy. He's over 100 kilos, which does help when you're... You're kind of always over 100 kilos when you're 6'5".
Yeah.
Unless you're thin as a rake.
Chris Larkham would have been a serious player. I mean, he was a good player, but he would have been incredible if he just pulled his socks up.
Yeah, if only.
Socks down. Socks down for Latham.
Yeah. Do you reckon Latham's like top five all-time fullback? He's up there, isn't he?
I don't know if he's ever... Because he was at the time when there was him
and Matt Burke.
Yeah. I wonder how many caps he got.
I reckon Latham's got... Well, back in the day, 60 caps, so that's a good change.
That would be a good... Let's have a look.
I'm sure he had some injuries as well.
46. So he was 6'4", just shy of 100 kilos as his listed weight. He had bloody hell. He had 78 Australia caps.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think Stewart is
best fullback ever? No, I'm not having
that. No, top five.
JPR Williams, Serge Blanco.
Nobody before professionalism counts.
Jason Robinson.
Jason Robinson's not a great fullback.
He's still
Christian
amazing.
Christian Cullen.
Cullen. I loved Cullen.
Yeah, I don't count anyone in the pre-professional area because it's just a different sport. I mean, it's just a different sport. It's just completely. And I'm not entirely sure.
Rob Carney.
I'm not entirely sure you can even say that the guys now would be better in the amateur era because I don't know how successful they'd be at being a dentist and also a rugby player. It's not the same thing, is it? So, yeah.
But Rob Carney, when we watched back last summer, when we watched back the 2009 Lions, the first test, Rob Carney's performance is one of the all-time best fullback performances.
Is that South African Lions?
Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Because it was Lee Byrne. Was it Lee Byrne? Lee Burns to lose. And that's exactly what he did. He lost it to Rob Carney.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lee Burns was brilliant at the time.
Carney just as a young
man. But you're right. To the level that we got excited about Maro Itoje when he came in and thought, this shirt sewn up for the next decade.
Yeah.
You can't help but think the same thing with Freddie Stewart.
But there is also competition, which is good. And Eddie Jones has spoken about how much competition there is and how much he likes having competition for the shirt to keep people hungry. And I think Max Malins, if he gets a shot at it, he will look amazing. And I think Furbank will be it. He's not had his best year or so, but prior to that, he was amazing and he will put pressure on that shirt as well.
Yeah, I also think Furbank...
Three different players too.
Yeah.
That's not good though, is it?
They can do different things.
It should be good. I mean, you should be really happy with it. But it goes back to the Hugo Keenan thing. Maybe just having one of them would be better.
Yeah, that is a problem. But I think you're right, Tim. Stewart, he has certainly for now got that shirt sewn up. Mm. Now, what was interesting, did you see the Eddie Jones archaic numbers comment?
He wants the numbers to be for the individual.
Well...
Pick at the start of the season.
Yeah, he just commented on that. In some sports, you just pick a number at the start of the season and it's irrelevant. But he's kind of making the point that... Why, certainly in the backs, forwards less so, or certainly tight five less so, where tight five, you're there doing a job. Mm. But in the backs, what purpose does the number 12 or the number 13 or the number 14 have?
I mean,
in the same way that, like, if all football teams, football soccer teams, just had a 4-4-2 historic formation, these days you'd think that was... archaic. You would have think that was archaic if they just all operated 4-4-2.
Yeah, so I think rugby is a lot more structured game. There again, the most structured game on earth is probably NFL, and they mix up their numbers. I think rugby league mixes up their numbers too. they not? Or
I think they do. Yeah, yeah. I'm sure they don't. They don't they, just have 1-13.
No, but they should do. And the reason I think they should do is because it just helps. It helps with everything: watching the game, pitch geography, understanding who's popping up where. You know, if you just have a guy in an All Blacks kit running down the wing, you might think it's a winger, when actually it's important that you do know that's the hooker. It's important because you can also identify the shapes of what the players are doing. Say if they're doing like 1-3-3-1 across the field, or 2-2-2-2, or whatever the thing is. I think that is important. So I did think about what he said, and some ways I kind of like it, but in another way I don't, because doesn't it not encourage individuality within the team? So that is my number. Ben Youngs might always want the number 24 or number 23 for whatever reason it is, and really just, you know, you want to win the 9 shirt.
Yeah, I think he's not saying, he's definitely not trying to put people off competing for that jersey, but it's more the patterns. When you watched England in this game, Farrell wearing 12 was often the first receiver, played it out the back to Marcus as the second receiver to give Marcus Smith more time. Manu wearing 14 was off.
He was not on the wing at all.
He was very rarely on the wing. He was often defending in the centres. Slade was often actually as an auxiliary fullback, similar to Farrell was sometimes as an auxiliary fullback. Stewart was popping up in the centre. And I think it's not taking the competition away. It's just showing more fluidity, and I guess the point that I would want to take from it is what you should expect from a 12 is not what you've always expected from a 12. Yeah. What you would expect from a winger is not what you would always expect from a winger historically.
But the fact that he's wearing the 12 shirt just makes it easier for me to actually work out what he is doing. Well, and that's what I would say.
So Slade was wearing the 13 shirt. He mostly played in back 3 in this game.
Yeah. And swapped with Manu.
Did you get confused then?
No. Because I would
he
say
was steaming.
I would point out that's really interesting. I point out, look, once again, Slade is on the wing, and the numbers would just help me confuse. Help me compute that. Whereas if they just had no numbers, it'd be hard to know. Have they actually switched full time? You know what? You know what's going on here? No, I think the numbers are important. I did consider it, and I think if they had another mechanism, like literally writing the position on their back. We'll go for it.
I did quite like, we spoke about it the other week, when Fiji announced their squad and they had lock slash back row, centre slash wing, fly half slash centre. I quite like that.
Yeah, but another good example of what you're saying is Curry at 8. Other than you know, doing stuff at the back of the scrum, it's just a back row position.
Yeah,
isn't it, really.
Outside the scrum. And that's certainties like New Zealand, other than in the scrum and the line out, basically, you've had Dane Coles or Cody Taylor or Kieran Reid who pop up in that 13 channel and operate like 13.
Yeah.
Like Ardie Svea does it brilliantly.
Well, they're not popping up there. They're stationed where they're meant to be.
Yeah, they play in a way that structures to give them space in that outside channel. In the same way that no other hooker I can think of has ever fielded kicks in the deep like Scout Brits.
Yeah.
He would be there as a deliberate receiver in the deep because of his running game.
Yeah.
Which it's still astonishing to think of.
Harry Thacker how could good he give that a good go.
Thacker could do that. Yeah. And I mean, Jamie Blamire, 4 tries in 4 tests. Ran one in from 50 yards.
What of it?
Oh, sorry, five in four. Yeah, scored in five, 4.
He's a try vending machine.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And I think Jamie George got a knock, so he'd probably end up starting.
He could do.
Now, there is another aspect of this game which I want to talk about, which, not that we really spoke about the game, but still, which is, did you see the footage? I know we've already done something similar to this, but Oliver Hoskins getting his cap.
Yes.
That was so cool.
Lovely.
It was so, so cool.
Yeah.
I didn't even know he was Australian until I saw that video.
Yeah.
So is that the London Irish prop?
It's awesome.
It's so nice to see.
And did you see as well, friend of the pod, Mark Atkinson, the video of him on the phone to his dad?
I did not, actually.
That is an emotional video. I encourage you to go and watch it. I think England Twitter.
I don't deal well with emotion. I'm too masculine.
Yeah, so you might not deal well with it.
Yeah, so I avoid it.
Really, really good. Really good to watch.
Yeah. At this point,
I was encouraged. I think the game was scrappy, not that not as entertaining. It could be, I think, Jaco Pyper had a big part in that. Bearing in mind, as well as Marcus Smith on one side, you've got James O'Connor, who, as an attacking 10, you won't find people more willing to have a crack than James O'Connor in world rugby. And somehow, this turned into a really stuttery, frustrating game. And I put that partly at the door of Jaco Pyper, because you said you were going to mention the breakdown in terms of the England-Australia game.
Yeah, and I do put it partly at Jaco Pyper, but actually more at the two teams. And I think Pyper set his stall out to be strict around the breakdown, and neither team learnt from it. And both teams, and Australia were worse, definitely. In numbers, they were worse. They gave away twice as many. I think it was 9 to 18, the count that I saw. 9 for England and 18 penalties given away by Australia. But they were so many simple, brain-dead penalties, including, I think each team gave away at least two of the blocking the kicker from a box kick, which Bevanrod gave one away in the first 3 minutes, which James O'Connor slotted. And then it happened multiple times by both teams throughout the game. That is just brain dead. If you know the touch judges and the referee are going to be picking up a blocking line when you're jogging back to pick up a kick, don't do it and give multiple penalties away. In the same way that in at the side or not supporting your body weight or just lying on the floor on the wrong side of the ruck, if Piper sets his stall out that he is going to be strict around that and you keep infringing, you've kind of only got yourself to blame. And I think Australia, I was disappointed at how many dull penalties they gave away, because it did mean the game was very, very stop-start, and we didn't see anything like the best of either team because of it.
Yeah, agreed.
England left a couple, and if England had been clinical in the way that Ireland were, England left some chances out there. They could, and very realistically should, have put 50 on Australia, which is not good for Australia.
Yes, they should have done. Jamie George should have scored that try.
Brilliant from Nick White, wing commander Nick White.
It was amazing. It was amazing to read it and to hit him from the side in that manner. There were other opportunities where they kind of fluffed their lines close to Australia's line. With Australia, I don't know, they've lost two very important players for this tour in Quade Cooper and Samu Karevi, but they've also got players back for this tour that they otherwise wouldn't have had, and they certainly didn't have when they beat South Africa twice. Guys like Rory Arnold and Will Skelton would be fairly handy when you're playing against South Africa, and they did it without them. And someone like Curtly Beale, such an experienced player, and still, he didn't have his best game, but still such a good operator. So he's not all down, but this was just all round a poor performance by Australia. It was almost, I was watching it thinking, they were so happy to give penalties away, spoiling the ruck. It was almost like they didn't want to play. All they wanted to do was just try and disrupt and spoil the game rather than try and play to beat England.
Yeah, and that's strange, actually, because I always think of, can't remember his name now, the coach of Australia.
Rennie.
Thank you, Dave Rennie. As a pretty attack-minded coach, actually.
Yeah.
You don't think of him as, you know, a Gatland or someone with some sneaky plan to ruin a game.
Well, that's what he's been doing with Australia, and that's how they beat South Africa twice and beat New Zealand, is by letting the boys play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very New Zealand style of playing, very New Zealand-y mentality. Personally, I don't like it, but it is what it is.
You would have loved this game, then.
By the way, did you see Marcus Smith get absolutely smashed by Paisami?
Paisami, yes. I did.
Love that. And do you know what I loved even more?
Well, actually, Paisami, he probably should have had a HIA for that.
Yeah.
Because it was his head on Smith's shoulder.
So, are you familiar with the work of a podcaster called Jocko Willink?
Yes.
You've mentioned him.
Ex Navy SEAL.
Yes.
Motivational, yeah. Just kind of mindset guru.
One of my favourite things that he says is normal face. So, if you're getting battered at jiu-jitsu or, you know, you're in a bit of bother, just show off your normal face. Like, it's just not bothering you, even though it is, just normal face. And I thought Marcus Smith had the best normal face after getting absolutely smashed by Payasamy.
He ran his fingers through his amazing hair and just like shakes it off or struts back to next job.
Normal face.
You just mentioned hair. Let me just mention hair. Do you think the whole mullet thing has just... We've gone too far now.
Yes.
Rob Liotta's mullet is ridiculous.
It really is.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Rob Valentini has incredible hair. Best hair since Riddiki Samo.
Wow.
It looks like what's that? Anime. It's like an anime character. Like manga.
Manga, Dragon Ball Z. It's ridiculous.
Well, you say ridiculous. Ridiculous is Bradley Roberts. Bradley Roberts has the most stupid hair in history.
So Rob Liotta's hair is similar to Bradley Roberts.
Wow.
I think these mullets are a consequence of these COVID bubbles that they've had to have, and they're just bored out of their mind, and this is how they pass the time, just making themselves look as ridiculous as possible.
It's a weird thing with rugby players as well, because rugby players are famously harsh and brutal to each other.
Yeah.
So like you wouldn't go wear cowboy boots on night out with rugby lads because they're what are you wearing? Like it's all very self regulated, but somehow they get away with the hair.
It's like the Trump thing. If you're so ludicrous that you just become immune to any criticism because there is so much that you can criticize someone for, like the Tom Dunn reverse
that's incredible
mullet. I've no idea how to describe it. It was a backwards high and tight.
That's right. So he's done that for charity.
Yeah.
Fair play to him.
But that still means he's walking around Bath.
He does.
He's popping into Waitrose to get some tender stem broccoli with that hair. So and he just struts around, people look at him and think, okay, fine. Right, they just...
That's the weird thing about rugby players, that simultaneously, everyone worships them, particularly in Bath, and will never say your hair looks stupid. But then they've also got the changing room banter when everyone tells you you're stupid.
You are stupid.
Even though you're not, everyone will be telling you that you're stupid.
You mentioned normal face. Curtly Beale, so this game, he didn't have his best game, which I said before, but he made a few errors. But every time the camera panned to him, he had this like resting, aggrieved, like the referee is offended. Like every decision, he could not possibly believe that the decision could go that
indignant
way.
Indignant face.
Yeah, resting indignant.
Resting bigger face.
But yeah. But I was actually looking at him late on in the game. I'm sure he's had his eyebrows plucked. Ooh. I'm sure he used to have bushier eyebrows and they're now like shaped. And they're almost shaped into an angle, like up and then down angle, so that he can't help but look.
So this is
aggrieved every single time.
So this is an idea that I heard of a long time ago. I loved it. But getting your eyebrows plucked, so you've got a slightly raised eyebrow, so you always look interested. So like when your wife is boring you with like ridiculous stories,
you see that so much. You see that so much on Nights Out, because I don't understand why some women do this, but they do, and whatever, each to their own. It's not my business, but they shave their... some women, quite a lot of women, in fact, shave their eyebrows off completely or wax them off and draw them on.
Yeah.
And you see it quite often on a night out where they just draw them a bit too high and people are just constantly surprised.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why you think they're interested in what you're saying, and they're not. They're absolutely not. They've got interested eyebrows.
So maybe that was what Curtly Beale was going for.
Yes, maybe.
He's got a really boring wife and he...
No, imagine that's why JB's talking about niche level 8 rugby
exactly.
As the first thing on the podcast, because he's been out to a bar, chatted to some woman about Huddersfield, and she seemed really interested.
Hang on, that's not true. Plymouth Albion won this week, beat Chinner, mate.
Did they?
Yeah, Albion are up to stuff, I'm telling you now.
Nice.
Mm. Loving it.
But no, you are absolutely right, Tim. I think we should do more lower level rugby, not less of it. More. Exclusively lower level rugby.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Well, I'll tell you what, as you were saying that you don't like it when games are fluent and stuff, JB, and you like it when it's a bit more fractious and when there's more structure, not less
structure.
I like balance.
That's what I like.
Yeah. Well, I think there was quite a good balance when you look at the two teams jumping over to Scotland versus South Africa. Because Scotland played some crazy rugby.
Yeah.
And it paid off at times. And South Africa did their boa constrictor impression and just slowly squeezed the life out of Scotland and eventually killed them, inevitably.
Yeah, and, you know, the first half was very competitive. Very competitive. And I tell you what, Stuart Hogg looks like a different player for Scotland to what he is for Exeter. For Exeter, he's merely good. For Scotland, he's godlike. And, you know, you can see what it means to him. Like, he went over those two tries and he loves it. Absolutely loves it.
And he was, I was a bit unsure when he was made captain a couple of years ago. Absolutely the right decision.
Yeah.
He's been so good for them. He's so passionate. And this, you hear him afterwards, it hurts every time Scotland lose. And this is a game that they were in it. They were definitely in it till half time. And if it wasn't for the early try, the Mapimpi try just after half time, and then a couple of Jacklin penalties, one from Kitsoff, one from Malcolm Marks, Scotland would have been in this right to the end. As it happened, they weren't. They were just suffocated out of it.
Now, we're not going to talk about this game, are we, without the pre-match comments of a certain Hamish Watson. Absolutely firing shots there.
I didn't see it, but tell me what he said.
So allegedly, and I didn't see us live, but allegedly he said, in the Lions, I was fortunate enough to play with players and coaches who showed us exactly how not to play against South Africa. Now, that would have been bloody cool had he have won, but he didn't win. So
yes.
He needs to shut his mouth a bit.
Although he was on the bench, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Which was interesting. They started Nick Haining for Mass, presumably, because he's about 2 stone heavier than
the big old
Hamish
boy.
Watson.
But hang on. I thought Hamish Watson was big enough to play in any position, anywhere, at any time.
Anywhere in the world.
That's exactly what I was told by all the Scotland fans. And should you ever question Hamish Watson's size, even compared to Nick Haining, it's worse, I've heard this, it's worse than saying bad things about Emma Raducanu. It's that bad. But, you know, on Scotland, you know, they are a team now, I think they are missing maybe two world-class players. They are the international version of Gloucester 3 years ago.
They're missing some depth as well.
Yeah, I'm not that bothered about their depth, to be honest. I just think they need two really, really good operators, probably in the forwards. Because I bet they look around that change room and they think, yeah, we've got this. We've got the talent to go out and beat most teams. Their top-end talent, when Finn and Stuart Hogg are, you know, tearing up trees, as good as anyone. I mean, Finn Russell is as good as anyone.
Stuart Hogg is as good as anyone.
Yeah.
Those two in particular, and a little bit of X factor on the wing with Ian Dew, for example, means that Scotland, as much as we always talk about midfield combinations for England and, oh, we need an attacking player and we need someone to distribute, Scotland seem to be able to just put up and down centres who are just real solid, straight north-south kind of players, and they seem to play this great brand of rugby. It doesn't seem to bother them.
Chris Harris, right? So Chris Harris would, I think it's fair to say, would never play for England. Now, that's not because he's not good enough. He just doesn't have the sort of highlighty type qualities that you need for England. But then they threw him in for Lions. He's bloody brilliant. He's one of the best defensive centres on the planet. In fact, he's probably the closest thing in the world to Lukonu Am.
Yep. Not far off, yeah.
A phenomenal player. Would never get picked up by England because, you know, the system's not broken, it's just different.
Yeah, although, Mark Atkinson getting his shout for England. I mean, that does give everyone hope. At 31, to get that opportunity.
Yeah, had Mark Atkinson been playing for almost any other team, he'd have 20, 30 caps. But
any other nation.
Northern Hemisphere nation, I might add.
Yes.
Which isn't France.
Well, France about 5 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, probably.
France now, maybe not.
Not so much.
Yes.
Just brutal South African stuff is the way I'd describe this.
Yeah. And did you see, Tim, you mentioned the Finsanity. In the first half, he picks up a ball. So Scotland are under the pump in their own 22. It's an exit play. He picks up the ball, shapes to kick, and instead of kicking, passes to Ian Dou, who has three... He's on his own on the wing with three South African defenders right in front of him.
Oh, so it's a fair fight.
And then he beats all of them and goes like 50 metres. And it's like, it looked like totally, totally the wrong call. It just happened to be the right one because Finn did it.
Finn knows stuff. He just knows things.
He does. So, he does.
Yeah, tough on this. If Scotland would beat South Africa, doing Australia and South Africa in the same bench of awesome internationals would be brilliant. Who have they got next?
Good question. Let me tell you.
So Scotland.
Scotland. They play Japan.
Ooh. Yeah.
Next week.
Excellent.
A replay of that deciding pool game.
What a game that was. What a game that was.
And I think they will win this one.
Hey, before we go on to...
I wonder if in the next week Scotland will try and have the game called off.
Hurricane. Typhoon incoming.
Yeah, Mark Dodson loves something. Right? Have I told you about the Lamborghini that parks in the around Media City?
No, I don't think
there is a Lamborghini that parks in Media City by Virgin Active, and its number plate is SRU1. And I can only assume it is Mark Dodson from his massive bonus.
He earns enough to afford a Lamborghini.
I mean, it's in his pay bracket, isn't it?
It certainly is.
So, anyway, just a thought.
Peter, who emailed, said, just on the subject of centres, and you mentioned Lacanio, he just said, Amandi Alande, best centre pairing on earth.
It is.
They were a real point of difference from...
They're incredible.
Well, from pretty much every team they play.
And the fact that they are so settled, they know each other inside out, they've played together so much, makes them even better.
Trust in defence, all that sort of nonsense.
Yeah. And they're both younger than I think they are.
How old do you think they are? 27, I'd say.
Well, I'd say early 30s.
Oh, okay.
But Diolande's 29, Lucano Am's 27.
Loads of money still to be made.
So they've got at least one more World Cup between them.
I've said Lucano Am is made for the top 14. Made for it.
Yes.
I could see him doing great things there. Anyway, as we've got to do this from an international point of view, can I talk about an international fly half?
You can.
AJ McGinty's leaving Sale Sharks.
Yeah.
In one of the...
How are you, JB? You all right?
No, I'm not all right, actually. To be honest, I'm delighted. I am delighted. Because AJ is going to go and make hundreds of thousands of pounds at Bristol. And that is more important than him showing up at the AJ Bell, in my opinion.
And more important than him sitting in the gantry with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people at Sale will miss AJ McGinty a lot because he's such a good bloke. He is genuinely one of rugby's good guys, but he's not dead. He's just gone to earn. Well, as I understand it, it's in the region of £500,000, including all bonuses and whatnot. That's crazy, isn't it?
That's 10% of their playing squad.
Correct.
They can afford nine other of him.
Yeah.
Plus their two what are they called? Marquee players.
So the marquee players are grandfathered in, so that's fine. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean,
he's basically getting Nathan Hughes' contract.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there, Tim.
Yes.
I think they're probably going to just recycle the money. If he was going to be my marquee player, I'd pay him that. I wouldn't otherwise. I just don't think it's smart. It's not smart. You've got to be careful what you say here. It's not a criticism of AJ McGinty. It's
no,
a criticism
he's,
of...
He's brilliant.
Yeah, salary cap management.
Yes.
And this is a terrible, terrible decision.
Yeah.
Because how much... Like, Phil says, you can have nine of them.
Yeah.
And that's it. You're done.
Yeah.
And I think Bristol are in a hole here, and they can't think of a way to get out of it other than spend money.
And also, if you have nine... Well, you obviously can't have nine of them because then with your two marquee players, you only get 13 guys.
Yeah, you might go mid-table in Super League.
You are going to create this position with the haves and the have-nots. Because you
well,
need...
Yeah, I was just thinking that, Phil. Exactly. I've not been to Bristol's training ground, but I imagine when I do go there, or if any of us go there, the car park must look ridiculous. You'll have,
yes.
Like, one, on one side, footballers' cars, yep. And on the other side, baggers.
Yeah.
Well, presumably, the guys who paid that much don't even drive themselves, do they? They just get valet service.
Well, they could maybe borrow...
Helipad.
Borrow the Cockermedia Learjet for a day or two.
How is the Learjet, Tim?
Oh, it's in for servicing at the minute.
Oh, wonderful.
That's why I'm staying. That's why I'm not there in person. I'm not getting a train.
No,
I'm waiting for the plane.
And why should you? You're just like who is the DJ that got the helicopter?
What's his name? Dan.
He's got an Italian name.
Oh, Zanetti.
He's got an Italian name. No, Tom Zanetti.
Tom Zanetti. Tom's the nephew of podcasting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It will absolutely be Lamborghini, Range Rover. I think Randrandra's got a V8 Mustang.
Has he?
Yeah.
Nice.
And then there'll
Charles
be.
Charles Pietal's got a personalised number plate. I know that.
Has he?
Sir Charles.
TAU something or other.
Yeah. P14.
I mean,
yeah,
T4U, something like that.
I'd be great if AJ goes and has a lot of success, and I'm sure he will have success. I'm sure he'll be very good for them. I think Bristol Law. I can't believe that they can afford that kind of money. And also, what they're going to do with Sheedy?
Is he going back to Wales?
Sounds like he must be.
Mm.
On the other hand, he will play a lot of games. You know, I don't know. It'll be around between Six Nations. Bad. And I wonder what Sale Sharks will do, more to the point.
They've got to bring someone in. The rumour. The rumour that I heard was looking at bringing in a boy back to the Northwest.
A boy back to the Northwest? Danny Cipriani?
No.
Mark Atkinson?
No.
Damn it. George Ford?
George Ford.
I can tell you right now, that's not happening. That's not a real thing.
I would be astonished if they did.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely a real thing. They're definitely talking to him because Alex Sanderson said that, didn't he? Mm.
Okay, let me tell you exactly what's going on here. In my
George Ford is maximising his pay increase from Leicester.
Sale have made no secret about it. They wanted George Ford forever. Every time he's been available, they've tried to get him. Before, they didn't have the means, and now Sale definitely do have the means. They definitely have the means. They can bring him on if they want. The reason I don't think it's going to happen... Sorry, just to clear this bit up. So when they say they've been talking to him, they've been talking to him for 5 years. Like, they've never stopped talking to him. They always wanted George Ford. That has been, like, their goal.
No, but you're now... The rules have changed. Remember when it was always January 1st, you're allowed to start speaking to players, and it was always a bit of a joke, like...
Mm.
Clearly, the conversations were happening beforehand, but no one was saying conversations are happening. Now, if you're in the final year of your contract, you can talk to players at any point within that year. So I think Sale have said, yeah, of course we've spoken to him. And George, if you're George Ford, you'll speak to, especially when you've got a contract to negotiate, potential extension, you'll talk to everybody. And Montpellier have been on the phone to him, apparently. You'll listen to all offers because that's going to help give you the best leverage.
Why not have the conversation? Why not have the conversation? Yeah. Now, here's why I also think it's a bit of nonsense, right? He plays, and this is a hard... Some people disagree with this, but who I consider to be the biggest club in England, probably the biggest club in Europe, they're up there, right? He's already at that level. He's already the highest paid player at Leicester, and Leicester are the only people that could make him a marquee player.
Yeah,
I believe he's on somewhere in the region, certainly pre-pandemic, of around 700k. Mm-hmm. That's a huge amount of money by anyone's stretch. So Leicester could keep him, they could marquee him, or he could go to France. To take 700k out of your salary cap, we just spoke about AJ. Now, I think maybe on some metrics, Ford is better than AJ. In other metrics, AJ is better than Ford. But there's not 200k's worth of difference there. There's not 300k's worth of difference there.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not a thing.
Well, what you can say, if you're George Ford, is he is more valuable now than he was 3 months ago.
Yes.
That is definitely true.
And he's going to need to plug that England money somehow.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot. I mean, that's a farce, what happens, isn't it? Oh, the whim of a coach, you get a quarter of a million quid pay cut. But anyway, that's another subject. Another subject altogether.
Well, that is the other thing. When I saw Marrow running out for England at Twickenham, I was just totting up in my head, what, doing a quick bit of maths, what's 50 times 25 grand?
It's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah.
And that's even before his Vitality money and his Vogue cover shoot and all the rest of it.
Albeit the last 10 or so appearances will have been at 18 grand rather than 25 grand because they took the COVID pay cut.
Only 18 grand.
Poor. Yeah, only 18 grand.
I don't know how he makes ends meet. I really don't. Oh, I'll tell you a bit of transfer news.
Yeah.
Official, confirmed, not reported, unless it has been since I spoke to someone. Lyon have signed Jonathan Kapoku, if that's his name.
Oh, one of the... Are they twins, the boys at Saracens?
Yes.
Not Joel Kapoku, the other one.
Did I say Jonathan?
You did say.
Because there's two of them. I'm assuming it's Joel then, because Joel's the better of the two, isn't he?
He's the one who's Joel's had more lock. game
Jonathan's
time.
The lock slash six.
Yeah, it's the lock. So Lyon have signed him.
Interesting.
I was trying to inquire how much he was going to earn. And I just got the answer, 12. I was like, no way, he can't still be on an academy contract. 12? A month. I was like, oh, right, okay, yeah, that makes more sense. I'd probably move to Lyon for that.
Mm.
So that's a nice bit of business for Lyon.
Yeah. Now, just on George Ford, so he's 28.
Yeah.
He'll be 30 at the time of the next World Cup. He could, if he was first choice for England, get two World Cups in, probably.
Yeah.
He could still be playing when he's 34.
So in other words, if he was Welsh or... maybe not Welsh, actually, because they got Dan Bigger, but it just goes to show that it's crazy. I hope he's not done in an England shirt, because he's playing that well. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
Yeah, well, I also hope he's not, but then I do find it hard to see a way back for him unless there are injuries. So would you, let's say someone else, let's say Leicester are going to maintain your deal, someone else in the Premiership is willing to offer you something similar, but you could get 50% more by going to France. Would you do it?
Yeah. I'll go to France. Yeah, definitely go to France.
Because that picks up the difference on your lost England money, but bakes it in as guaranteed, but means you never get another shot at the World Cup.
Yeah. Look, if George Ford goes to Sale, it'll be because it fits in with his life, because he wants to be back in the Northwest, wants to be up in Saddleworth, wants to live close to his mum, yada, 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 yada. That's why it'll happen. It'd be a harsh rugby argument to make now that Sale is a better place to play rugby at the moment than Leicester is. A
couple of years ago, you could argue it.
100%.
Now, it's tough.
2 years ago, I think George Ford would be saying, I'm not wasting another year of my career at this hellhole.
Yeah.
Right now, they are the best team in the Premiership. And from what I can tell, it's not even close to the second. Maybe Saracens, but I think they're okay. It's got the biggest crowd, so you're going to be running out. You know, when a Pat Welford Road is what, 20,000-something?
Yeah, over 20,000.
Yeah, you know, he's the best paid player. They might be the best paid English player for his club that there is outside of marquee guys.
Yeah,
I mean he's right.
And also, I think there's a great example. If you could go back a few years, and you know, if Danny Cipriani could go back a few years, that opportunity when he stayed in England on not great money because of the lure of England.
I think he
would totally make a different call and go and cash his chips in at the French casino.
I have a feeling Danny Cipriani would do a lot of things differently if he had his time again.
Not get caught stealing those bottles of vodka in Melbourne.
Allegedly.
Didn't he get charged with that?
Well, allegedly.
Yeah, let's say allegedly.
Say allegedly.
Some things he wouldn't have changed, though. Absolutely.
Yes, well said, Tim. Well said indeed. So, some interesting moves there. I mean, just last bit on AJ. I think when you lose a player and you lose him for more than you value him for, that's probably a good thing rather than a bad thing, because it means someone's got to pay that bill, and it means someone else has not got the salary cap to spend on other players. It'll probably cost Bristol an extra back row or something like this. I think it's a silly way to manage a cap.
Bristol have done it before, because they stole Kyle Sinclair for a similar amount of money. So you've got 20% of your salary cap tied up in two players.
Incredible.
And
do you know, it's strange. I think both these teams are in a bit of turmoil. I think the Pat Lamb shine has basically worn off now. I think that's pretty much done.
Just in time for the 7-year contract.
Just in time. As I said, as soon as I heard Donny, I was like, well, this is peak Lamb. It doesn't get any better than today for him. It's going to go downhill. And I also think Sanderson's not finding it easy at Sale at the moment. There's no hiding that. I think he's done a remarkable feat of management because he's taken on Steve Diamond's staff, Steve Diamond's players. The whole thing was built around Steve Diamond, and he's kept continuity for about a year now. That's remarkable leadership. But at some point, he's going to have to make his own appointments, and maybe this is just the start of him refreshing the squad. And that might be another reason why George Ford is thinking, Leicester's actually quite settled. You know, we've done our rebuilding. We are where we need to be. Whereas I think there's going to be a few more moves in Sale. I mean, there's speculation again about Faf in the rugby paper. Was it rugby paper that Faf showed up?
I don't know. I don't think I've read Fissler today. The rugby paper is somewhere around there, but
yeah, there was
Fissler who got the AJ McGinty news out 27 minutes before it was officially announced.
to be fair to him, didn't he do it 2 days before they moved their? I thought they moved their announcement back to a Wednesday from a Friday, or forward, I should say.
Maybe.
Oh, I don't know. But Bristol dealt with it really well with some very funny, reactions on social media. The news coming out early.
If a player has signed a contract, right? I mean, how much is there really that much point in breaking the story? I mean, you leak these stories all the time. I mean, it's old in about 10 seconds.
Yes.
And he's already signed. It's not like you're ruining the, you're ruining it, or you're doing anything, you know, too mischievous. You're just announcing it. it's a very temporary gain.
Did either of you see the other games? So we've not touched on
Premiership Rugby Cup,
Italy, Argentina.
Oh, okay, yeah, that happened. Argentina won,
which was a good win for Argentina.
Yeah,
we've not touched on really France Georgia.
No, sorry, I've got an update. So
lower league rugby.
No, it's kind of. Do you remember last week when I was thinking, there must be some Argentine Germans somewhere.
Yes.
In naughty villages who could go and play for Germany.
Like Kremer.
Yes.
Must be.
Well, there
again,
are.
To re-emphasise one more time, we are not suggesting or casting any aspersions on the ancestors of Marcus Kremer.
No, absolutely not. But there are. And there's an Argentine that plays for Germany.
Our friend
Dennis Fink got
yes.
Contact. Who is
Dennis?
Who knows everything there is to know about German rugby?
He certainly does.
He's like, look, we've got one. Here's one here. And there's another one of German ancestry, not an Argentine, but a New Zealander who even tweets in German and plays for the Blues. He's a fly-half, I think.
Cool.
Yeah, really cool.
That's awesome.
But he's still got his heart set on the All Blacks, so he's not going to be... what's the nickname for the German team?
Don't know. Good question.
Yeah.
What's the name of what? Sorry.
Is there a nickname for the German team?
Well, yeah. Well,
the Iron Eagles or something.
Well, yes, I think there is a name like that. But what in German, the national team in German? I love the translation so much.
What is it?
Der Nationalmannschaft.
Keep that. So he won't be becoming a Schaft anytime soon, sadly.
Their nickname?
Yeah, go on.
Schwarzer Adler.
Schwarzer Adler?
Which is...
Black...
Eagle?
Black Eagles.
Yes. What was mine? What was my Iron Eagles?
Iron Eagles. Not far off it, wasn't it? Because their badge, obviously, is an eagle.
Yeah. So maybe we might have another Black Eagle soon.
Hmm.
Sorry.
Love it.
We were talking about...
Well, France Georgia.
Yeah, I saw this. It was quite good.
Which was... not Georgia did very well.
First half.
If it wasn't for the two yellow cards, Georgia scored an awesome try in the second half with the wing back of the scrum, which does highlight an interesting issue with swapping players around.
Mm-hmm.
So did you notice who was defending on the wing for that scrum where the Georgia winger went in?
I did not.
It was Mathieu Jalibert.
So they were hiding him?
So they were trying to hide him.
Uh-oh.
And Georgia identified that. He... stepped in when he should have held out, and Georgia exploited it very well, and the winger finished the try very well, but it was all because Jalibert was trying to be hidden on the wing.
Was it you that told me this story, Tim? Someone told me this story. Back in Edgeley Park, Sale were playing a team, it could have been one of many teams that had Ryan Lamm playing. And as soon as Lammy came off the bench, they were all going, go for Lammy, go for Lammy, go for Lammy. Was he that said that?
I think that rings a bell. I also remember some games at Edgeley Park. The Sale team in the Edgeley Park days were bullies in the best possible way. And I remember when Gavin Henson was playing for Saracens, and they basically did the same thing to him. They thought, right, we're having you.
Yeah, good old days. So they were trying to hide. That never works well, I think. Unless you hide him at fullback, it never ends well.
Yeah, even at fullback, it depends who it is and if they're used to being in that position. But it's I don't like it. And it's something that I don't really think of from a Sean Edwards defence.
Yeah, it's true.
Which was weird.
He must be really bad.
Who, Jalibert?
Yeah. Really bad.
He read this horribly. He stepped in. He runs in to step in when he didn't need to, because everyone's drifting. The whole of the French defence and the whole of the Georgia team are drifting, and he runs in and then immediately realises, oh no, I shouldn't have run in, and turned around and just got far too much work to do.
Did you see the counter-attack from first half between, what the hell's the winger called? The one I love.
LaBelle.
Oh, LaBelle is some player.
He is a good player,
but
isn't
he? Got the pass from the other wing.
Pernod. Some player.
God, he's good. He's so good, Pernod. He's just, he's different level good. LaBelle looks slick, though. So he just floats the pass over, beats him on the outside. I thought he was going to go the whole way. McAloo had a game to forget. It's probably one of the worst halves of rugby I've ever seen. Just dreadful from after what we said about him last week.
He is incredibly talented, but he didn't.
Just not today.
Yeah, he didn't have his. But Georgia are a very physical team, and they performed better than I was expecting in this game.
They did, actually.
Yeah, I think were it not for the two yellow cards, I think they would have it would have been a lot closer.
Yeah. Well, that's all well and good, but let's finish this off with the Fiji game.
Yes.
I'm not going to call it the Wales game, it's the Fiji game. I thought they were robbed. I thought they were absolutely robbed. And some of it was their own fault, you know. Like, you can leave your keys in the car, and it, you know, that is your fault that you left the keys in the car, but you can still get robbed. And you know, the red card itself, this is what I learned today. Red cards don't really affect, as this is the point that you made, they don't really affect the match all that much normally.
Which Phyllis said many, many times.
But what they do is they make yellow cards more serious.
So yeah, the one caveat I would say is, if you are a well-organised team, I don't think red cards are the be-all and end-all.
No. Well, they are if you get yellow cards.
Did you not think, and this is what really surprised me about this game, is I thought Fiji's organisationally were absolutely brilliant, which is not something you often say about them. And I thought they dealt with being a man down incredibly well.
Yeah, they dealt with being one man down fine.
And I'll tell you something else as well. You know, if I read the papers tomorrow and nobody mentions this, I will know that none of the people covering that game, whether Wales Online or anyone else, I know that they are stealing a living. Because for me, one of the most impressive things about Fiji was the organisation and their maul defence and their maul attack. If they don't mention that and they just say, oh, flowing offloads, they're stealing a living. And I bet nobody mentions it. They were superb. They got their maul organised quickly. When they gave away penalties in the maul, I couldn't work out what it was for. Like, the first one after the red card, I just couldn't work out exactly what they were meant to have done.
They gave away a penalty. One of the yellow cards was for collapsing a maul, wasn't it?
But the maul stayed upright. So the maul stayed upright and worked its way to the middle of the field, and they went back. I just couldn't work out what that was.
Well, one of the guys who I imagine will have been instrumental in that, the maul defence, will have been Rory Best, because he's been brought in just as a coach for this tour because the Fiji, the main coaches, haven't travelled.
Yeah, Wales had some nice little line-up moments. And actually,
Fern Cotton stuck back in Fiji, isn't he?
He is.
Yes.
Yeah, and, you know, they were attacking a line-out in Wales which had Adam Beard in it. And I rate him as one of the best maul defenders on the planet.
He kind of swims through his arms everywhere.
Couldn't do anything. Matavesi, I thought, had an awesome game.
Matavesi.
Mad skills, chip chase.
Yeah.
Just a lot.
Breakdown, he was everywhere.
Great fitness as well.
He was described as a gun for hire. He's kind of available for anyone that wants to
snap him
up.
Snap him up.
Surely Northampton are going to keep him.
He looked class.
He was class.
Such a good engine. Such a good skill set and physical.
I wonder if he'll play the Royal Navy game.
Hmm.
Is he still serving? I think he's still serving.
Don't know.
Oh, I met one of the friends of the pod, Kieran, who was in the Royal Navy, sent me the Navy jersey.
Oh, awesome.
Long-time listener to the pod. He was saying that when he was down in Australia working in Perth, it was a godsend listening to him. So anyway, yeah, I had a beer with him, and he was out on a like school reunion night and with some of his old mates, and another one of them, there was a Navy helicopter pilot, was one of the guys out.
Excellent. What was
very
flying?
Interesting. You would have chewed his ear off all night, JB.
He would have chewed my ear off, but fine.
and one of his other mates was an absolute dead ringer for Jimmy Carr. Like, I could not believe, to the point where people in the bar actually thought it was Jimmy Carr. When we kept saying Jimmy Carr's over there, I honestly thought it was Jimmy Carr.
So when when I was in Japan, Phil wasn't with me this night. It was the night that Phil got tired and went to bed, so I had to go out on my own in Tokyo. I ended up making friends with a guy. Literally, his whole career is based on the fact that he looks just like Ryan Reynolds. He looks like this. His name's Sean Breeley. Look him up on Instagram. He's got like hundreds of followers. Because all he does is dress up in suits, go around world capitals and take pictures of himself looking like Ryan Reynolds. That's what he does. And that was...
Life's going to be pretty good anyway if you look even remotely like Ryan Reynolds.
Yes.
Oh, mate, like, he looks so much like Ryan Reynolds that when he was in LA, Cuba Gooding Jr. walked into a bar, saw him, a cafe, saw him, said, "You look just like Ryan Reynolds, let's go drinking." And they went drinking all day.
That's incredible.
How much, yeah. So have a look at Sean Breeley. Well,
these bunch of lads that were on their reunion, of which a couple of our listeners were among them, invented a drink when they were at school. They were massive fans. They were up in Lincolnshire and they were big fans of Newcastle United and David Ginola at the time, to the point that they invented a drink, a drink, their cocktail they used to have on nights out called a Ginola, was gin with orange lemonade and Archers.
Lovely.
Gin OLA.
Do you know Phil?
I was just going to put a shout out saying, if anyone has invented a drink in honour of a rugby player, or just invented a drink in general, let me know. Contact edgechasers@gmail.com.
I can tell you, Phil's invented a cocktail.
Have I?
You have. A Milan special.
Oh, Milan specials, yes.
Which it's a delightful thing. It's not quite a double espresso, is it?
Yeah, double espresso and a double amaretto.
Yeah, now, it's not really a cocktail, is it? Because you need three ingredients.
A screwdriver is a cocktail.
Is it? What's in a screwdriver?
Orange and vodka. Isn't it?
I don't know. I think definition of cocktail is three ingredients.
Nah.
I mean, maybe dusting sugar. Maybe a drop of sugar syrup.
Yeah, you normally get like a
tiny
little Biscoff or
amaretto.
Double espresso, double amaretto. I like it.
Oh, yeah. It's lovely.
It's not a session drink per se. you can have a few of them.
Challenge accepted. Yeah, I don't fancy that. Yeah, I thought Fiji were absolutely robbed. I thought they were by far the better team for the majority of the game. Yeah, some part of me thinks Wales thought they'd just show up and they'd beat Fiji. And when they went down to 14 men, they thought they'd doubly beat Fiji. And Fiji's tackling. Let's just talk about that. Christ almighty.
But this is... So, Fiji against Wales, one red card, two yellow cards. Tonga against England, one red card, two yellow cards. The tackling is ferocious, but there's some times where you just need to turn it down from 11, because when you are going in that ferociously every tackle, you are inevitably ultimately going to hit someone in the head, catch him with a swinging arm, and you're going off.
Yeah, so I disagree with you on the Fiji example. I do agree with you, Tonga. Because the red card... It had to be a red card, yeah. Because, that's how the decision tree works. That's just how it is.
It was a swinging arm to a player on the floor. He clocks him in the head, full force.
Bad.
There's not. There's no way you can go with that. If in different circumstances with or any circumstance really, I don't necessarily mind that being a yellow card.
Yeah.
But with the framework, the consistent application, it has to be a red card.
It was so clear, and the problem was it was so clearly two different incidences. And I think the refs got that right.
The tackle and then the second.
So if the tackle is sort of, you know, what was so stupid? He wasn't getting up. You know, he was doing better just getting...
He was trying to push him into touch. He was trying to get him into touch.
Yeah, he was trying to get him into touch.
Just think it was a... Yeah. So anyway, shot himself in the foot there.
Yeah, but it was a poor decision. What I will say, just in terms of the way we describe it, is when you say the words swinging arm, I think of that video that is the one with Mick... whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Him off, send the dirty, get off, get him off the field. That's a swinging arm where someone swings the arm deliberately into the face. It was a stupid decision. Yeah. We can all agree that.
Madness.
But there was no intent to hurt him whatsoever.
Decision tree says what the decision tree says.
I understand, but there is a difference, and I know intent can't come into it. I understand it, but I think it does need to. And if someone does a swinging arm to the face that you go, oh my, he meant that and he was trying to clock him in the jaw, like, not only a red card, but a severe ban.
Well, yeah, they mean...
I wouldn't have minded if the referee, as we say, as Phil's already said, I wouldn't have minded if the referee's decision, which he initially went to, Nick Berry, said, he's dropping a bit there, so I'm going to go with the yellow.
Yeah, I mean, look, the second decision, if the player was that switched on, he knows he's committed a red card defence. I'd probably try and finish off the guy on the ground with a few more blows because you're going off, aren't you? Of course, he wasn't quite at that level.
That would be funny. Can you imagine a double jeopardy rule? It's
like, yeah, sorry, mate.
There's a red card, but you're allowed. Okay, red card, so you've got 2 minutes. You've got 2 minutes left, and you're allowed to do as much damage as you want in 1 minute of play.
The guy's already knocked out on the floor.
Exactly.
Go
exactly.
to town on him.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was a red card's a red card, so you know, nothing I can do. So that was the first one. But the other cards were technical offences, from what I remember.
Yeah, one was collapsing a mall.
Yeah.
And then there was a Tui Sui one, which I've watched so much rugby this weekend. Yeah, I can't remember
what that was. But I thought they were brilliant. And I thought the tackle height and the timing was on the limit of legal, which means it's perfect.
Yes. Yeah, mostly.
You watch the pro game and then you watch international games. And the one thing I will say about international games is when you do watch it, you go, oh my God, this has gone up some, like 5%. On what is already a devastatingly physical game, you now got 5% more.
Yeah. You couldn't... There's no way you could do much more international rugby than we already do.
No. But then you throw the Fijian tackling into that. And like when Dan Biggar's acting hurt, you know something bad has happened. Yeah, and this happened time and time and time. Their timing is just brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. They should have won this game. And I think without the cards, and let's talk about that try, which was never a try.
Well, that we mentioned before, the Lewis Rees Samet.
Never a try in a million years.
Yeah.
I mean, the wheels in him was unreal, but yeah. No, I agree with you. That's not a try.
He's not grounded the ball.
He bounces.
Yeah. It's just not a try. Now, here's why...
We just didn't have the frame rate to conclusively... But we all know he bounced that ball.
Yeah. Now, the reason I don't... I think it's a shame for Fiji that it was given. Another massive problem with it, because it's kind of like the opposite problem that we had when... Do you remember when Jamie Noone scored for England against New Zealand? Mm. It's quite a famous one, this. He goes over, it's 100% a try, but this is before the on-field decision was given, so it just went straight upstairs, is that a try? It's like, well, we can't see, so no try. And it was obviously a try.
Yeah,
so that's why they changed it to what's the on-field decision.
Yes.
So Nick Berry's got to give an on-field decision. That's just what he's got to do, and he does that. And that's the right thing to do. And I've said, no one can say, I like that... an element of the refs just playing it by ear, reffing what they see, and simultaneously have a problem with this, because he had to give that call. Now, the laws say the on-field decision overrides any uncertainty. It's like benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, you're right. You are right. It just felt like the wrong decision because we couldn't... The frame rate wasn't good enough to conclusively prove that he'd bounced the ball.
Yeah.
But we all know he'd had bounced the ball.
Exactly right.
We all know what happened.
So you combine that, and yeah, look, the scoreboard flattered Wales, and they'll feel very lucky to get out of that one alive. Literally.
It's the first pool game in Bordeaux in the Rugby World Cup.
So awesome.
They're lucky that Fiji are playing first. Because if Fiji were playing last, they'd have a right fight on their hands.
Yeah. Well, hopefully Fiji will get enough time, enough prep before that game.
And they've got loads of players in France as well.
Yeah. And they'll be getting some players through Fiji Jura, I want to say. Or is that the one that's played in the NR, in the Australian? Fiji Jura. Yeah. Moana Pacifica.
That's right.
Yeah. So that will help as well.
Come Pete on, Shaw Fiji. Pete Shaw in the email just put it really well. He said, Fiji has no money as a union, little playing time together.
Not true. They have loads of money as a union.
Okay, loads of money, which is not bezzled to where it needs to go. Little playing time together, missing a number of their best players, including their three best, played a chunk of the game with 13 men after a red and yellow card, and yet still almost beat Wales in Cardiff. The score flattered Wales, and also Liam Williams, tough as nails, pummeled and kept getting up. Mm. He is like, I think you've described Liam Williams before, JB, as like a bare knuckle boxer.
Scaffolder.
Yeah, but he's kind of got that, like Brad Pitt in Snatch.
Yes.
He is hard as nails.
So hard.
And speaking of hard as nails, I watched some rugby midweek. When was it? I think it was Wednesday evening. I watched it live on the BBC and I absolutely loved it. It was great. It was England versus France, wheelchair rugby league, and it was brilliant for two reasons. One, there were some lovely skills on show, but number two, those boys are absolutely hard as nails.
Yeah,
it was a prop. It was fantastic to watch. I loved it.
Did they come out of their chairs?
No, I think so. There was quite a few tumbles.
That's what I mean.
But I think they were more strapped in.
So how do they right themselves afterwards?
Tilt themselves up.
I have a friend.
They can just prop themselves back up in the chairs.
I have a friend that plays wheelchair rugby, and I keep saying I'm going to get him on Rugby Dungeon because I've got loads of questions. You're probably not the best person to ask him to. He is, so that's what I'll be doing.
Yeah, but I would highly recommend it. It was great to watch.
And can I just say, as someone that works in broadcasting, that's what the BBC should be doing. Forget BBC, forget about rugby. There's loads of companies. There's BT Sport and Amazon and Sky and all the rest of it that will do that, and Talk Sport. You don't need to worry about that. They played the New Zealand v England women's rugby game the other week. They're playing wheelchair rugby league. That's what the BBC should be doing. Mm. Brilliant.
Absolutely.
Well then. Okay, just very quickly, predictions for next week. If you actually care to do them. I don't really care to. Let's not do them.
Let's do them quickly. Just one word.
Okay, you just pick them all. And
okay, Scotland, Japan.
If we were talking about, well, let's preview Huddersfield's next game. JB would be right. Okay, let me settle in.
Or Albion's.
Come on then, what we got?
Scotland versus Japan. Scotland.
Scotland beat down.
Italy versus Uruguay should be quite interesting.
Italy will win, but competitive.
Yes, agree. Georgia versus Fiji.
Fiji.
That's being played in Spain, interesting.
Is it?
Yeah.
Someone's worth getting vaccinated for that.
It's almost like someone's been listening to me. That's where I said Fiji should base themselves all the time.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Barcelona.
Barcelona, that would be awesome. Fiji versus Georgia.
I'm going to go for Fiji.
Yeah, give me Fiji, but I think that would be a very interesting game.
That really good game.
Wales, Australia. I think Australia.
Australia.
With the 20 players Wales have got out, I think. Mm. But they're at home. I'm going to go Wales at home. Just.
Give me Australia.
Damn bigger to bring them home.
We have France, New Zealand, which I think is an 8 o'clock kickoff on the Saturday.
Oh, awesome.
Which is
Saturday
excellent.
Night, 8 o'clock, France, New Zealand. That's so good.
Yeah. There's so much history in that game as
France.
Well.
Can't wait.
France.
I'd love France to win this one.
France are going to do it.
I think New Zealand are going to win, but I'd love France.
What do you think about their kit another week on, Phil? You saw the white version of it today.
I prefer the white to the blue, actually. Yeah, I like the kind of curls, the swerved flag round the white more than I do on the blue.
I agree with you. And England's kit with the red flashes down the side?
Okay. It just, when you... So, it, from a distance, looks like an England kit. I'll take that. Up close, it doesn't look the best quality. I could be totally wrong, because I've not actually handled it yet, but I'm not entirely convinced.
We're happy to try it out, Umbro. Send us some.
Yes. I'd love it. If you send me some, then I'm sure I'll give lots of compliments towards it after that.
Absolutely. That's why they do it. That's why freebies work. They send you freebie stuff, because then you get good reviews.
And I don't care if it falls apart after two washes, because it's free.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Then we have England versus South Africa, 3:15 on Saturday.
Oh my, what a spicy game that's going to be.
England could be missing Owen Farrell and Jamie George, which would be two big blows. They could...
Bevan Rod up against a loose head playing at tight head is one thing.
Yes.
Bevan Rod playing against two different massive South African tight-head props. That's a very different proposition.
It's an enormously different proposition. And actually, Bevan Rob played very well. He worked incredibly hard. One of the things I was most nervous about was Bevan Rod, because until this point, the biggest game he's ever played was away at La Rochelle in the quarter-final.
But physically he was fine. It was emotionally, apparently, that he let himself down. I've heard firsthand it was emotion. If he only was slightly happier, I think he would have been able to do or less. I don't know. But emotion means, if you get your emotion right, Weenie Antonio's nothing.
Yes.
You batter him.
So I've
heard this.
I was worried about this. He did well in this game. I am still worried. This has not calmed my nerve for when he comes up against whatever combination of Vincent Cock, Trevor Nyakane, and Franz Malherbe comes his way.
God.
Other
teams with the South African... I was going to say, just to think of all the other teams with South African tight-head props, Kebble, Scotland, and so it's just ridiculous.
Yes. I'm still very nervous. Now, Marla is apparently out of quarantine on the Thursday.
This is a Marla job. I love Bevan Rod. This is a Marla job.
It is a Marla job. But Marla will have been training in his garage.
Yeah.
He will be out, so he will be okay. I think Genge will miss it because of the quarantine period. I know. That's
fine,
not,
fine.
That's not, yeah.
It's such a load of...
Follow process.
Any other games?
On the Sunday, 2:15, we have Ireland versus Argentina. Which I think that'll be a good game. Ireland will win that.
Yep.
They'll put the second team out, so it could be an Ireland upset.
You miss them.
Go on.
You've got Albion versus Cambridge. That'll be Albion.
Cambridge.
Wrong. Huddersfield versus Tigers. Sheffield Tigers. Have you played Sheffield Tigers?
I played them a couple of times. Yeah.
How do you say that one going?
Tigers.
Huddersfield. And
Yorkshire Derby.
Also.
Who is Sedgley playing?
I got no idea. I'll tell you who
Sedgley under 14 to play in Broughton Park.
Broughton Park lost this weekend. Actually, I might add that.
Well, no. Broughton Park under 14s did. Broughton Park under 14s today
dominated.
Won a very, very tense Lancashire Cup game against Trafford Metrovic.
Get in.
Yeah. Is it Hough End or is it? Park
it's
Lane.
At Hough End. It's at Hough End.
Yeah, well, Hough End next weekend.
Well, just remember this. It's a very big week in rugby.
Raffy Quirk's Broughton Park. Sorry, I should have said. Raffy Quirk's
exactly.
Broughton Park.
Taking like Mark Atkinson's England.
Taking on Phil Lugg and Sedgley Park, Sedgley Tigers.
Mark Atkinson, Sedgley Tigers. Big Luther Burrell's Sedgley Tigers.
Of course.
Petrus Duplessis, Australian scrum coach, Petrus Duplessis.
Well, it's Sedgley a Park massive Tigers. Week in the world of rugby this week, because it's Oldham week for Tok H. Now, I don't know if you know the history of Tok H versus Oldham. Every time we talk about Oldham on this podcast, they batter us. So I'm kind of making the decision not to play this week, because it just gives them superhuman strength.
I was at one of the famous games.
One of the famous collapses.
After you'd been bad-mouthing them on Twitter because they pulled out of a game or something like that. And you were playing and I was on the sidelines and all of their spectators were like, there's that lad who's been bad-mouthing us, smashing.
Don't mess with Oldham. It never works well. They got a red card, a yellow card, and they still beat us.
In many ways, JB, that is a measure of the success of the
Exactly,
podcast.
Exactly.
Enough people listen that even in a parochial niche level rugby, they still know when you slag them off.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I'm not slagging them off. I'm explicitly not slagging them off this week. But yeah, it's going to be a good game.
JB says Oldham aren't fit to lace the boots.
That is not what I said. That is not what I said. I have nothing but respect for that club.
But we got some brilliant emails this week. Some of them are timeless and I've deliberately... I've got them on file, don't worry, but we're contactedchasers@gmail.com. But Sam Griffiths, just one point that really made me laugh. He said, an observation about Geordie Barrett. He said, Geordie Barrett looks like someone with an allergy to bee stings who has recently suffered a bee sting.
Very good.
Bowden Barrett is a fairly handsome chap. Geordie Barrett is not a handsome chap.
Not quite, is it?
It's not quite clicked. He's a hell of
a
player.
Which is strange. Because he's taller,
yes,
and he looks almost the same as Bowden Barrett,
but
it's like the
Louis Two Swords version of Bowden Barrett.
We got sent an email with a link to the old Louis Two Swords, an article about Louis Two Swords, which is now in Blackpool, which we mentioned on last week's podcast, which is it's now an actual Madame Two Swords. So rather than having terrible waxworks, it's got. Legitimately good waxworks, which is
I would have no interest in seeing good waxworks of famous people.
Well, you don't want to see a pretend Sherlock Holmes.
No, I would quite like seeing.
What do you do with a pretend Sherlock Holmes? Oh, look, it looks a little bit like Sherlock Holmes.
I would happily go to Madeira to see that bronze statue of Ronaldo.
Yeah, just for that. Yeah,
just for
fair.
That.
That is fair.
And a bit of Madeira.
Another
wine.
Reason for a tier two tour.
Hey, I'm telling you now, Portugal is picking up.
So I did
interest for me for Tier 2.
I did look the other day. The fixtures have not been announced for next spring.
No,
but
they're not.
I am keeping an eye on it. Well, the this year's tournament has not yet concluded, so hence why they've. So I'm keeping an eye. But if we could get, say, Portugal versus Spain, or something similar in Lisbon.
Yeah, the problem is with this tournament now. The lure of Madrid is just so great.
Madrid is pretty cool.
And Madrid, it draws me in. And I never want to go to Eastern Europe ever again.
Lisbon would be cool, though. Lisbon would be very cool.
Lisbon would be cool.
Whatever that place in Madrid was that we ended up on the Saturday night, I've spoken to a bunch of people about Madrid, and every conversation I always start to describe it, and they go, that place, it's like a food place in the
Platea.
Day. What's it called?
Platea.
La Platea.
La Platea. Just off Morgan.
Oh,
just
so
off Margaret Thatcher Square.
Yes.
Oh.
It is. Oh, awesome. Margaret Thatcher Plaza.
Margaret Thatcher Plaza, that's it, yes.
Yeah.
It
La Platea. Inside an old cinema, it is awesome.
Yeah. And also, we've got to remember, it's a COVID-friendly city. All the French kids were going there because they had no rules and they've got a decent mayor who treats it properly.
Let's the boys play.
She lets the boys play, thank God.
Perfect.
And let's leave that there.
Yeah. contactedchasers@gmail.com. Hit subscribe in your feed so that you get every episode delivered to you. And if you appreciate that you get a podcast 52 weeks of the year, every single Monday, then you can also support us as well as subscribing, telling your mates and all the rest of it by going to patreon.com/eggchasers. And final order of business, we will have an extra patron-only episode in the little patron section at Patreon. But Phil, our winner of our little giveaway we'll announce now and then pick up on the podcast is?
It is going to be, let me just hit that, it is Ben, so it's number 496, it is Ben Wiedemer. Ben Wiedemer.
Ben the Redeemer.
Ben Wiedemer.
Ben the Redeemer.
You're not getting a shirt,
Ben. The Redeemer, congratulations.
You're getting a tie. Tie.
Because JB, what are you doing to the shirts right now?
I'm changing them into soundproof little things, and it's kind of not working. But yeah, I need to do a lot more of them.
we'll see what we can do, Ben the Redeemer. You got something good coming your way, and we'll pick that up on the other podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.